Let us begin. Hello everyone, welcome to Brew Distilled. I'm your host, DG Monte Ale. And the title of this episode is going to be Divas and Exes. We'll be talking about an update with the current situation between Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay, along with an update on Tim Tebow's return to the NFL, and I'm also recapping episode 4, Made for Love, from HBO Max. And there also will be beer pairings. In our first topic, I got some recent news here I've been hearing lately about the current situation with Aaron Rodgers up in Green Bay. Based on recent reports, it's been reported that Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers have met to discuss a current contract, and also probably updates to the contract he's on now, which could be signs of progress that a resolution is going to be in place regarding the current situation Aaron Rodgers up in Green Bay. It's been reported that Aaron Rodgers does not want to return to Green Bay unless the Green Bay Packers general manager is fired, but lately we haven't really heard more news about that, as these recent talks about them discussing a contract appear to be progress towards getting the situation resolved. There's also been reports that the Packers are starting to lose faith with Jordan Love, who was drafted in a past draft, who is said to be the replacement of Aaron Rodgers, which is what probably got this whole thing started to begin with. But so far, no contract has been signed, nothing has been updated, but the Packers do have time with the season yet to occur. About 4 months in the future, the season will occur, so the Packers do have some time here, as the contract is said to be up for 3 years, just 3 years left in his contract. But they're also talking about probably a possibility of trading Aaron Rodgers, and one of the leading teams that's been up for that has been the Denver Broncos. But the cost for making this trade will be very high for the Denver Broncos to make, and we're talking about them making a trade to Green Bay, and where they'll give up 3 first-round draft picks and one of their top players in order to get Aaron Rodgers to join their team. The thing is, though, is this way too much. Even though Aaron Rodgers is an outstanding player who could very well probably help the Broncos contend for a Super Bowl, but here's the thing, how much does Aaron Rodgers have left in terms of playing? How many years will he be left in the NFL? It's not likely he will follow the path of Tom Brady and keep playing into his 40s. It's likely that Aaron Rodgers will not play that long. So is 3 first-round draft picks way too much to give up for Aaron Rodgers? And if that were to happen and they do get Aaron Rodgers, what happens if they don't win a Super Bowl? I mean, for the next 3 years, they'll be out of a first-round draft pick, which would be benefiting Green Bay in the long run. I mean, other teams rumored to make this move would be the Raiders, has also been in the talk to making such a trade. And it's also been spoken about that Aaron Rodgers has been intrigued by joining the Raiders. But it appears right now the Denver Broncos have been the leading contender to make this trade to get Aaron Rodgers, but 3 first-round picks and a high-ranking player does sound like a lot to give up for a player that may not be playing 5 years from now. Now, the reason the Broncos could be a contender for Aaron Rodgers is because the Broncos did not draft a quarterback in the draft. They went ahead with defense in the first round. It took a player that Dallas could head, actually. So this could be a reason why the Broncos are looking to make this move if this were to occur. Right now, I don't think it's likely. I think right now the direction this is going in, that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are going to come to a resolution on this, but this doesn't say what's going to happen to general manager who Aaron Rodgers has been allegedly very outspoken against. There is also a former general manager of the Green Bay Packers criticizing Aaron Rodgers, referring to Aaron Rodgers as a diva. Now, the topic of divas has been a buzzword in the NFL, usually referred to as a position of the wide receivers, that wide receivers have been referred to as divas in the NFL. So the idea of quarterbacks being referred to as divas has been pretty interesting, as, you know, I don't think Aaron Rodgers is being a diva here. I think it's Aaron Rodgers trying to advocate for himself and for his future. So it's kind of interesting here seeing that quarterbacks should not be referred to as divas in the NFL. I'm not sure if it's going to be a short-term thing or it's going to be a long-term term that they're going to be referred to in situations like this, but it's nonetheless a very interesting situation that is starting to develop, as now we're starting to see quarterbacks are referred to as divas now, but we'll see if that lasts in the NFL, if that term is going to indeed stick here. But it looks like Aaron Rodgers is advocating for himself for his own future. He's done a lot for the Green Bay Packers, and the Packers are indeed in a position to win the Super Bowl again, probably even 2 of them in their best case scenario, assuming that they're able to keep Aaron Rodgers under contract. Because if they lose Aaron Rodgers, this could set back Green Bay for a few years, probably even longer, depending how well they draft and what kind of talent they have in the roster. So it appears that Green Bay definitely does want to get their result quickly and also in their favor, but also to benefit Aaron Rodgers as well. I don't know if this is going to include keeping their general manager around. That hasn't been really mentioned lately in terms of right now. It looks like things are starting to go in a positive direction with Aaron Rodgers meeting with the Green Bay Packers, but it's also too soon to tell in terms of how this is going to resolve. And also, they're going to be able to find a way to trade him to a team, assuming there's going to be a team willing to trade 3 first-round picks in order to get Aaron Rodgers, which I had to say is definitely too much to give up for a player of his caliber. Now, if he had like a longer, more years to play, then definitely go for it, but that's a lot to give up for one player, even Aaron Rodgers. But anything in the NFL can happen. Anything can happen here. This is a very much an ongoing developing situation. I'll continue to watch it here in the Brew Distilled podcast, see how it gets resolved, but it is nonetheless a very high-profile situation. But also, you know, going back to the question of divas, the NFL, NFL. I really don't really see players as divas. I mean, there are players who do tend to get dramatic in terms of what they do on the field, in terms of touchdown celebrations, which is why the term divas usually been used against wide receivers. But for quarterbacks, I really don't think so. Because, you know, even though Aaron Rodgers has been highly criticized with how he's handled the situation, I definitely wouldn't say he's been a diva in a situation, but it is also a term that's starting to come out more now. Now, I did find a definition on the internet refers to what a diva in the NFL actually is, and here's what the definition says. According to the definition, and that is what is a diva in the NFL, and it says that everybody who watches football knows that a diva is and mostly equates them with outspoken wide receivers and flashy self-absorbed prima donnas. But there's nothing more to being a diva than just being loud and obnoxious. True divas have to love the spotlight both on and off the field. Now, I definitely don't believe this applies to Aaron Rodgers, that this is something that's applicable to him, but this has also been a term that's been tossed around as of late, but also not one, a term that I see as him should be connected to. So that is the latest news I have here in regards to the Aaron Rodgers situation. I'll continue to monitor the situation, see how it plays out in terms of resolution. It'll be very interesting, but I think right now he's going to stay with Green Bay. That's my prediction as of now. Now, going into news of a quarterback turned tight end, and that is Tim Tebow. It has been reported that Tim Tebow signed a one-year contract with the Jacksonville Jaguars in where he's going to compete for a spot as a tight end on their roster. It looks like he's probably getting up, I think some way and somehow he's going to end up getting on the roster as most likely a third string tight end. I think that's how it's going to most likely play out because I don't see him going away from the Jaguars anytime soon. I think he does have a future there because Urban Meyer's there. I mean, it's been reported they bought houses right next to each other in Florida, so definitely Tim Tebow's there for the long term. Most likely he'll be groomed as a coach, most likely an offensive-minded coach that'll most likely become part of the Urban Meyer coaching tree in the future. But it's also going to create a distraction in Jacksonville. We really haven't heard what Trevor Lawrence thinks of the situation right now, but having Tim Tebow and Trevor Lawrence on the same field at the same time is definitely going to be an interesting situation to watch. But also Jacksonville may not very well have a good season this year. They may have some time to rebuild here, but the idea of Tim Tebow and Trevor Lawrence on the field together at the same time is most definitely going to be an interesting situation to watch. Because if that goes wrong, that could also hinder and hold back any progress that Jacksonville is looking to make for quite some time. And that is a current update there in terms of Tim Tebow joining the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll see how it plays out, but I think we'll be seeing him on roster once the final roster is made for Jacksonville Jaguars, most likely as a third string tight end, but he also will be most likely a red zone player as well once he is on that roster, looking to be the designated scorer for Jacksonville Jaguars in a red zone situation, which will also be one of the most watched storylines in the NFL in the upcoming 2021 season. So we'll stay tuned for that here in the Brew to Still podcast. And turns out things play out with Aaron Rodgers and Tim Tebow in their NFL adventures. Now, as for my beer pairing for the sports topic, the beer I'm pairing with the sports topic is the Anchor Brewing Company Steam Beer. This beer has its crispiness of a lager, but also the complex nature of an ale. This beer is brewed in San Francisco, an excellent beer coming out of San Francisco, and Anchor Brewing has been around since 1896. The can is a can I have here for is actually yellow with blue lettering. I really like how that stands out. Really good combination of the colors, blue and yellow. This is a bright amber beer with balanced hops and a very rich taste to it as well. According to the can art, the Anchor Brewing is born of the Gold Rush and a survivor of earthquakes, fires, and prohibition. Anchor Brewing's history is linked to San Francisco, one of the continents in its 100-year-plus run. It's definitely a bold beer, a really good ale, and also an excellent beer that I highly recommend. And it's most definitely a good product from the San Francisco beer scene, you know, from the San Francisco and the Bay Area. The Bay Area is known for being like wine country, known for wineries. But San Francisco definitely has an excellent beer scene. They got a lot of craft beers out there, a lot of microbreweries that join Anchor Brewing. This steam beer is a prime example of the products of the San Francisco beer scene. An excellent steam beer worth checking out. And also a very good beer to have all year around. Doesn't matter if it's hot out or it's cold out. I think this beer could go around with any occasion all year round, but also good beer to have while watching a sports game at the same time. I love the taste to it. The color to it is very interesting, and I love it's not too hoppy as well. Very good taste to it. It's not a hoppy beer, but also very well balanced and a very good bright coloring to it as well. A beer that I definitely want to check out again, and that's from Anchor Brewing, and that's called the Steam Beer. Now, Anchor Brewing is definitely a mainstay in the beer industry. I mean, Anchor Brewing has been known to make some really good beers, and this one here, the Steam Beer, is a prime example of that. And that is a beer I'm pairing for this week's sports topic here on Brew Distilled. And also do stay tuned to future episodes of Brew Distilled, where I do look forward to profiling more beers from San Francisco, as most definitely a beer scene worth checking out. I'm now going to recap episode 4 of Made for Love from HBO Max, titled I Want a New Life. So if you have not seen the show, or you have an interest in watching Made for Love from HBO Max, do not proceed forward, because there will be spoilers. Now, this episode is a very big episode, because it talks about like where Hazel came from, but also about who she was before she met Byron. So it's a really good character study and also a very revealing episode in terms of Hazel, who she is and how she became to be, and also who, what kind of person she really was before her marriage between Byron Ogle. We start the episode between Hazel. She's at a college campus selling phones to people. She's actually not selling phones, but she's selling raffle tickets to people who are buying these raffle tickets with the assumption they're going to be entered into a contest to win a free phone from Byron Ogle's company. Now, clearly, Hazel here is really doesn't have a phone to give out. She really just like a hustler here. She has like this hustler lifestyle. She's selling these tickets just to get money out of people, and she's kind of, it's kind of like a scam she's running here. And she's on this campus. She's assuring people that the phones give quality. She's selling these tickets, and she's selling a lot of tickets here. She's got a large crowd here buying these tickets from her. So it really shows that Hazel is very charismatic, and was also a very charismatic hustler in her early years before she met Byron Ogle and before she got married to the guy. She's wearing the disguise. She really can't recognize Hazel. She's got sunglasses on. She's got a hat on. She's in a hurry. She's like focused on getting these tickets sold. And but it's very much she's in a hustler mindset here. Now, it's not long afterwards you see her get away from the crowd. She goes to a different part of the campus. She's getting out of her disguise, and she's put into her bag, and where she then gets a mysterious phone call here. Now, the phone here in the Made for Love series is a very critical item here, because whenever the phone rings, it's like it's a very significant moment is coming in the episode. Hazel answers the phone, and we hear Byron's voice, and Byron is telling her on the other line that the phone isn't out yet, that he would know about it, but Hazel clearly does not know it is Byron Ogle calling, as they have not met each other yet. She is then confronted in a surprised moment by Byron Ogle. Byron Ogle approaches Hazel after hanging up the phone. Now, at first, Hazel is in fear of this moment. She has no idea what Byron is going to do. She thinks that Byron is angry about what she's doing by selling these raffle tickets for his phone. But Byron is very calm and collective about it. He's actually not angry at all. He said he's actually intrigued and happy for Hazel, as he asked Hazel if she made enough money. Hazel said that she does it from time to time because she's got a speeding ticket she's got to get paid off as a way to justify her actions to Byron. And Byron is actually not upset about this at all. He's actually intrigued by this. And he's actually very excited to see Hazel as well, even though Hazel has no idea what's going on, as she's also very leery of what Byron is trying to do. Byron then addresses Hazel in a very diplomatic and very calm, friendly manner, by saying he feels inspired by what Hazel is doing, that he was there at the campus to give a speech and entrepreneurship to students on campus. Hazel's so confused by this, as she has no idea what is going on. Byron then uses the phrase, a curious phrase actually, about spotting opportunity and understanding human desire, which Hazel questions him which one he's trying to do right now. Is he spotting opportunity, or is he understanding human desire in terms of his interaction with him? Byron then answers her question by saying he's using both, and then invites her to dinner with him in Rome. Now, obviously they're not in Rome, they're in his desert her town in California, and Hazel says she doesn't have a passport. She's wondering how she's going to get to Rome. She asks him, does he have like a high-powered jet? And he says she doesn't have to worry about the passport, that he'll take care of it, and that the location for the rendezvous is going to be on her phone. He then walks away, leaving Hazel mystified in terms of what's going to happen next. And it's most definitely a very interesting introduction to this episode, but as it shows how Hazel and Byron met for the very first time. We then see Hazel going to like a cube-like trailer. That's where we see Lyle there waiting for her. That is a staff member that Byron designated to pick up Hazel for this date that she's going to go on, but she arrives at this trailer on campus that's shaped like a cube, and she's also wearing that green dress. Now, this is the same green dress we saw her wearing at the very beginning of the series, the one that she wore. She came out of that pipe at the very beginning of the series, that sewer pipe, or not sewer pipe, but also a water pipe that she came out of. She's wearing that exact same green dress, which answers a question from the very beginning of the series, like from the very beginning, that's the dress that she was wearing at the very beginning of the series, and also the dress that was cited as what she wore in the very first date, the one that was in the compound behind that glass. She's very confused about the whole setting. Hazel then steps inside this cube-like trailer, and there's Byron waiting for her. And inside this cube is an actual artificial environment, as if they were in Italy. Rome, actually, because that's where Byron says he's going to take her, but they're not actually physically in Rome. They're just in this artificial environment that Byron has created, but all looks so real. And we see a mystified Hazel look all around her that this is actually a real environment, but actually artificial, but almost real at the same time, that nothing around her is what it seems, and there's even people around her. It's definitely a very busy restaurant. Her Byron is greeting her, also assuring her that it's all safe. We also can't see the door that she entered from, or from right behind her, as also more the restaurant scene, and it's very eerie scene. Actually, it kind of reminds me of WandaVision, where Wanda and Vision were in the artificial environment that Wanda created. So I definitely do see some elements of WandaVision in this scene here, but this is also something that Byron created on his own. It's when they take a seat where Hazel's looking around more. She sees a little girl waving at her, but when we see the girl waving at her, waving to Hazel, we see some like static there, like electricity, which shows some glitches in Byron's system, which that's a very dead giveaway that this is very much an artificial environment. Hazel's waving at the girl, but she doesn't seem fazed by the electricity that seems to be generated in in this room. You know, Byron assures her that he could explain how he made that environment, but also doesn't seem very much interested in doing so. What I see in the scene is definitely Byron's effort to win over Hazel, that he wants her really bad. He wants his date to go well, and he's also willing to pull out all the stops in order to make this an environment that Hazel's comfortable in, but also he wants Hazel and also wants to impress her at the same time. This is most definitely a very interesting first date in a TV show. You know, we see a lot of shows here, but also seeing this connection between Hazel and Byron, where Byron is completely at ease, but Hazel also feels a sense of uncertainty at the same time. It is no doubt a very intriguing, but also mysterious scene at the same time. It definitely gives off a very sci-fi vibe to it, despite the show's kind of like romantic intentions as well. And it's after the scene, we go back to the present day, where Hazel's waking up, she's back in her father's house, and we see this present day moment here, which is after she got out of Byron's compound. She joins her father at the breakfast table. Her father's having breakfast there. We see Diane with her own breakfast as well. And her father is saying that, telling Hazel that she's got to pay rent. He shows her a list he came up with expenses that he has to pay, and wants Hazel to chip in if she's going to stay there and live with him. You know, Hazel then tells her father that she has no interest in doing that, that she has to pay for a divorce lawyer and also for a surgeon as well to get the chip outside of her head. And her father counters this by saying that this costs money, that surgeons and doctors do not work for free, and that what she's looking to do is going to take a lot of time and she's going to need money. And Hazel reluctantly agrees to do this, but her father also says that she also has to respect his loved out Diane, who's also at the breakfast table as well. Now, we all know that Hazel's not okay with this relationship between her father and his loved out Diane, as Diane is not a real person, just a doll that sits there. And also, you know, kind of wonders, like, what is her father's intention with this doll? You know, her father is not married to anyone, obviously. He's not dating anyone, so his only human interaction or lack of human interaction is with his loved out Diane, which is really something that is not sitting well with Hazel at all, as she has yet to come to terms with this. We do see a funny moment here where Diane has a full plate of breakfast food right in front of her, but yeah, she obviously can't eat it. Hazel's questioned her father in terms of how that is done. And what I see in this moment is a bonding moment between Hazel and her father. They're bonding. They just don't know it yet. There's like no conflict between the two. They're just discussing, have a very innocent discussion over this whole issue with Diane and her father. And Hazel and her father are just bonding over this, even though they're just kind of like just having this moment here together. And you know, Byron's watching this whole thing. He's watching this whole thing play out. He's using this as a way to gain information in terms of how he can better connect and relate to Hazel. You know, he's using Bennett to gather information. He wants to come up with smells to help rent back Hazel, as he's clearly trying to see what her outside interests are, like her outside world interests, actually, and he wants to replicate those in order to get her back. But he's also very tense and also tightly unwound here, that he's not really relaxed at the same time, that he's very much anxious to win Hazel back. So Byron, watching this whole scene plays out, you know, it's him getting more information, but he's also not at ease at the same time, that he's very much in a type A mindset as in terms of getting Hazel back. Now, we then go back to the Hazel in the outside world, where she's back at a college campus, where she's trying to gather smartphones for people, trying to gather their phones, or getting ready to go into yoga class. She's pretending that she works for the class and that she's got to gather their phones, as they're not allowed inside the class. And just like in the beginning with selling those tickets, she's able to get people's phones from them. They put them into a basket in terms of Hazel has no interest in them getting their phones back. You know, she's back in her hustler mindset. She's got to get money to pay her father in terms of pay rent if she's going to live there. So Hazel's going back to her old self. So this episode, you know, continues to show revelations in terms of Hazel and who she really was before she met Byron. And now Hazel's back to her old self in terms of hustling to make money. You know, she takes the phones over to a pawn shop where she's getting them appraised and how much money she's going to get from each phone. What was really funny in the scene as a standout moment is that she questions the pawnbroker why the Google phone is worth so much. And she's doing this because she knows that Byron's watching the whole scene play out. She tells the pawnbroker that the phone is a piece of garbage and doesn't work right. And she then looks into a mirror because she knows Byron's watching the whole thing. She knows that he's watching, and she wants him to know that she's mocking his phone, she's mocking his product. She even gives the finger to the mirror as a way to give the finger to Byron, because she wants Byron to know that she has no interest coming back to him. And she's using this very covert way to mock him at the same time. Very well done. I liked how that played out here, because, you know, Hazel, she's out to seek her independence away from Byron, and is also using a lot of ways to kind of play a mind game with him. I believe that she's doing that to just get inside his head by criticizing his product, even though he can't come to her at that moment. And as she's doing that, even though she's probably not going to make money off this phone, she wants to use it as an opportunity to mock Byron and find a way to get back at him and get inside his head. Now, the pawnbroker obviously has no idea what is going on. He then offers a price for the phone. And then Hazel gets a surprise moment in this episode where a woman comes from out the back of the pawn shop and confronts Hazel. It turns out that this is an old friend of Hazel named Bangles. You know, Bangles confronts Hazel because it was actually Bangles who made that green dress that Hazel wore to her first date with Byron, and also in terms of how she's the dress that she wore when she escaped from Byron. So it goes back to that green dress that she wore at the beginning of the episode. We now know where the dress came from. It's actually part of an art project from Bangles that Hazel had to wear in door to go to first date Byron, we see a scene here where she's asking Bangles to borrow the dress, and she says she's going to give it back, that it won't be damaged. But it's also an art project for Bangles, that Bangles is using this for a final exam in her art class. So this dress is actually made to be a piece of work of art. It wasn't made to be worn, even though Hazel wore it. And, you know, Bangles is obviously very mad about this because she blames Hazel for failing her final exam for her art project. That's why she's working in his pawn shop. That's why her life went downhill, all because Hazel never gave the dress back. Hazel tries to reason with Bangles by saying that she had no choice, that she was unable to get back to Bangles to return the dress, as if she got involved with Byron and got inside a compound for 10 years, cutting her off from the outside world. This doesn't seem to be working for Bangles, though, that Bangles is very mad about what happened here, mad about losing that dress, which altered her life in a very significant way. Now, what I see in the scene here is that this is Hazel's life coming back to haunt her. Her past is coming back like a ghost in this scene, where, yeah, she's got her problems with Byron, but she's also got problems with her past coming back like a ghost to haunt her. So, you know, her coming back away from the compound, you know, she escaped from the compound, but she's also going back into the old world that she once had, where there's some unresolved problems going on there, particularly with Bangles, whose life was impacted by what Hazel did by going on a date with Byron. So it's kind of like an effect I see here. You know, Byron met Hazel. Hazel goes on that date with Byron, wearing that green dress, but also screwed over Bangles in the process. So we see like a chain reaction here, where Byron's actions led to a chain of events, where we're now in that moment with the pawn shop here between Bangles and Hazel, having that somewhat hostile reunion here, even though Hazel trying to be diplomatic between Bangles here, but also seeing what I call the Byron effect, that Byron's actions have led to this moment here in this pawn shop, where not only Hazel's life is altered, but also Bangles as well. It looks like that both are in a very bad situation here. I don't think both are in a very equally bad situation here. I think both have their own trouble going on here, that, you know, Bangles and Hazel here, they're both in a jam here. You know, Hazel's trying to escape from Byron, but also Bangles is in a life that she doesn't want, that she really can't seem to really get out of here. All that changes though when Bennett comes to the pawn shop. You know, obviously Byron knows where Hazel's at. He sends Bennett there to try and win Hazel over. Hazel's immediately afraid. She finds a power drill, trying to use it as a defense weapon, even though Bennett is not inside the pawn shop as of yet. You know, Bennett tries to assure Hazel that he was sent there on behalf of Byron, as Hazel apparently does not see Bennett as a threatening presence. You know, Bennett says that he has some smell samples for Hazel to try, because Byron's building this, what he called a smell cube for Hazel, in order to try and win her back. And the pawnbroker really has no idea what's going on here. He's oblivious to the whole situation. He just goes ahead and lets the guy in terms of Bennett. You know, pawnbroker just buzzes Bennett right on in. Bennett comes in, and this is where Bangles sees that something's going on here. This is a turning point moment here. Bangles is no longer angry with Hazel. She then intervenes on Hazel's behalf by getting Bennett to leave. Bennett then leaves. Bangles then turns to Hazel and says that Hazel she knew in the past would have been more aggressive in that situation, and then ask Hazel what is going on, because she knows that Hazel is clearly going through something now. It took that moment between her being afraid of Bennett in order to get Bangles to understand that Hazel is very much in a very bad situation here. They then go back to her father's house in terms of Hazel. Bangles and Hazel go back to her father's house, to Hazel's father's house, in order to talk over in terms of what's going on here. Clearly showing that the two now have a united front, that, you know, Hazel needs help here, and Bangles is willing to assist Hazel with this. It's not long where Bangles goes over to Diane, the love doll, and closely examines it by saying she can't believe that Hazel's father is in a relationship between a love doll. It's not long afterwards where Hazel's father comes home. He sees Bangles inside their house. He's not happy about this, so this pretty much lets us know that Bangles has really does have a long history with Hazel here, and it's one her father is not happy with. He makes a remark that Bangles is let out of prison, pretty much showing that Bangles definitely does have a very shady past here, and he's making it clear he does not want Bangles inside his house, that he does not want Bangles around Hazel at all in any way. You know, Hazel then intervenes. He comes to her father with $200, saying that it's the money to pay the rent, and her father says, how did she get the money? She says that he doesn't want to know, but also says it had nothing to do with anything of his being sold at a pawn shop. Her father doesn't seem too concerned with it, knowing that perhaps she does have this shady past, as he's more concerned about having Bangles inside his house. We then go back to Byron inside his compound, talking with Bennett and also Fiffany in terms of how he's going to win Hazel back. He's very much distressed here. He's threatening suicide. Fiffany then asks Byron where is Zelda the dolphin, because she sees that Zelda's not in the pool. And this is really, now this, the response from Byron is really disturbing, also very sociopathic as well, where he tells Fiffany that Zelda has lost her pool privileges and that he intends to eat Zelda. You know, this is Byron saying he's going to eat the dolphin because of what the dolphin did in terms of allowing Hazel to escape the compound. I mean, it shows that Byron's clearly in a witch hunt here. He's looking for those who screwed him over, those who he says betrayed him, and he's really upset here. And, you know, Fiffany goes away to saying that she's got to go check on Zelda in terms of extracting some data, and Byron continues to watch what Hazel is doing as he's watching his conversation with Bangles. Bennett then comes back after his ill-fated trip to the pawn shop trying to get get back on Byron's good side, but Byron is clearly not angry with Bennett here. He's more focused on winning Hazel back. In a very spontaneous moment here, he says he needs to drink beer. That's what he says he needs to do, because he knows that Hazel likes beer. So Byron clearly believes by drinking beer, he's going to be able to better connect with Hazel. So it's almost like what I'm seeing here is Byron acting very irrational here, making some rushes of judgment, acting very anxious. You know, he's so desperate to win Hazel back that he's willing to do whatever it takes to make that happen, even though it may not be the best course of action. Kind of lets us know inside what goes inside Byron's head, his psychological makeup in terms of what makes him nervous and what makes him distressed. Like, he apparently comes off as a guy who likes to control everything. And when he's not in control, he does whatever he can to get back into control, even though making some really reckless decisions along the way. You know, Hazel she has her own chaos going on right now. So she's making decisions that may be reckless as well, because she has some misadventures in the past episodes in terms of her escape from the compound. So we see both the chaotic side to Hazel and Byron here. They both have this very chaotic situation going on, and they're both trying to find a way to get out of it and resolve it in order for them to be the winner in the end. It's almost like a very chaotic game of chess here, where they're both playing this very chaotic game of chess. Both are losing pieces very rapidly, and they're probably losing pieces of chess in this game of chess in a very rapid way, to where they feel they're running out of time. So they're trying to come up with a solution in terms of how they can win in the end. As you know, Byron is clearly facing off with Hazel here, and they each have at least one person to help them along the way. You know, Hazel has Bangles and Byron has Bennett. You know, they each have an ally along with them to help them in their quest here. But it's almost like very satirical look here, as Byron, what he's willing to do to win Hazel back by saying he's going to drink beer. Bennett says he'll help him, as he'll help them learn in terms of what people in the outside world do to better bond. So I kind of see some satire romance here. You know, Byron's trying to win this relationship. He's trying to get his relationship back going here in terms of their marriage, but also poking fun at the structure of romance at the same time here, as Byron is clearly a guy who doesn't really have it all together right now, as he's trying to make some reckless decisions here in order to get his relationship back started again. But what's also really interesting here is that Tiffany goes back to a room to make a cryptic phone call to Delisle, saying that if he is still alive, he needs to reach out to her, as they need to come up with a new plan here. So it's clearly that Tiffany and Lyle are clearly in cahoots here. They're working on something that Byron clearly does not know about. So this kind of really shows here, you know, Byron's world is starting to fall apart here. He's trying to get his relationship back in order with Hazel, but he doesn't know that his own co-workers, his top co-workers, are also plotting against him in some very covert way at the same time. You know, he's got this tunnel vision going on right now. He's focused on getting his marriage with Hazel back together, but doesn't know that people within his own company are plotting against him for their own agenda. And it's really interesting how the scene played out here, where Byron is oblivious to the whole thing. Tiffany, she's running out of time here. She's got an agenda here, and she's got to move quickly to make this happen. But Byron, he's focused on getting Hazel back. We see the two pretty contrasting scenes here. One with Hazel talking with Bangles, and then also one with Byron talking with Bennett. And Byron and Bennett, they're drinking beer together, but they also clearly are not into the whole beer thing. They really don't know how to pour beer, to be honest. I'm watching them pour the beer. It's all foamed up. They're drinking it before it's really starting to settle. And Byron says he likes the beer, but also at the same time really doesn't seem to know what beer really is, as he seems like he doesn't really know much about anything. That's what they're really showing Byron out to be. He's very much a tech genius, but also doesn't know about basic things such as beer and also donut holes, which comes as a revelation from Bennett. You know, there's a scene where Bennett mentions the part that Hazel gets homesick. This catches Byron's attention. And then Bennett mentions one time that he was once asked for donut holes from Hazel. He has to explain donut holes to Byron. Byron gets angry by saying that once he gets Hazel back in the compound, in order for him to have donut holes in order to get to Hazel. And I think what this shows here is that Byron is starting to learn more and more in terms of how little he knew Hazel, even though they're married for 10 years. There was a lot about her he has no idea about, doesn't know about, and now he's starting to learn this, and also more revelations he learns about, the more unsettled that he gets. And I think this really shows, like, when someone's in a relationship, how little they know about their partner and how that lack of knowledge impacts the relationship in a very negative way. Because, you know, when two people are in a relationship, a very romantic relationship, them knowing more about one another helps the relationship flow here. And now Byron is starting to realize how the relationship fell apart, at least part of it. You know, Hazel didn't really seem into the marriage to begin with, and now she's gone, and Byron is starting to realize what went wrong. And there's definitely a lot of problems with this marriage, and one of them is how little Byron knew about Hazel and what he's trying to do to gain more knowledge about her in order for him to get the relationship going again, the marriage going again. So I think what this episode is really starting to show here in terms of the lack of knowledge in a relationship and the hazardous consequences that lack of knowledge will bring down the road in a relationship, that, you know, part of love is for two people to know everything about one another, but then once there's starting to some cracks in that, it all starts to fall apart. And Byron's starting to learn this in a very harsh way, and now he's trying to fix it. But Hazel, at the same time, has no interest in going back to Byron. She's completely done with Byron. She doesn't want to go back to Byron. So it appears that every effort that Byron is going to put into this, it's not going to work, as Hazel was completely made up her mind. She wants a whole new life, and she's dead set on getting there in the end. We then see Hazel back at her father's house talking to Bangles. You know, Bangles is asking Hazel if Byron could really see what's going on right now. She's kind of like miming the whole thing right in front of Hazel. Hazel assures Bangles that Byron could completely see and hear everything that's going on in their conversation. Bangles then does things to expose herself in order to mock Byron and Hazel's, which clearly doesn't sit well with Hazel's father. He's clearly not happy with Bangles being there, but he's also trying to get dinner done at the same time. It is then revealed that Bangles and Hazel have their own secret language, and then we see them talking to one another in that secret language, where Bangles says that she knows a lawyer that could help Hazel out of her situation. And with Byron watching, Byron has no idea what the secret language is. He's not familiar with it. He starts to panic as he's watching, holding the phone with Bennett sitting right next to him. Bennett then says he's going to go get an interpreter in order to help resolve this in terms of how they can better understand what the secret language actually is. And it's funny because it gets revealed that Hazel's father also knows the secret language. He goes in there and says the word to get out to Bangles because he's still trying to get Bangles outside of their house here. But also seems pretty good with the idea of Hazel getting a lawyer to get her out of this marriage with Byron, as this is a connection that Bangles has. So it shows that here at Bangles is someone with connections. She's kind of like a fixer, maybe not like a Saul Goodman kind of fixer, but also one that can help Hazel get out of her jam with Byron. We then go back to Byron's compound. He's sitting on the sofa there. Ben and Fifney come in there, and it is revealed that Byron starts to issue an ultimatum saying that if Hazel does not return to the compound in a time frame of 48 hours, he said he's going to merge. Now, we don't know what merge is, but it's clearly something that Fifney does not see as a good thing and tries to tell Byron he can't do this. And that's where the scene ends. We then go back to the scene where Hazel and Byron are on their first date, back in this artificial environment room that Byron created. Byron then starts to demonstrate the ability that he has by asking Hazel to name a place that she would like to go to, and once she starts naming places, he tells her to snap her fingers, and all of a sudden we start seeing him in environments such as Paris, Egypt, Antarctica, and even the south of France. He even grants Hazel $1 million by depositing that to her account at the spur of the moment right there. You know, this is a very intriguing scene here, them going from environment to environment, seeing $1 million all of a sudden in Hazel's bank account. You know, it's from one environment to another. It goes back to, you know, back in WandaVision, like I call it like a WandaVision moment, them changing these environments all of a sudden. It's after all this where Byron asks Hazel, where does she want to go? Like, what does she want to be? Hazel starts to believe that he's offering her a job. That's where Byron proposes marriage to Hazel. And the scene really goes quiet here. We hear like a very quiet piano sound in the background. Everything's changed all of a sudden. It goes from this moment of wonder and excitement to this very sincere moment in where Byron's proposing marriage to Hazel. And Hazel has no idea what's going on as this completely came out of left field to her. Byron then demonstrates his knowledge of Hazel, also shares a little bit about himself, and then makes an offer again for her to marry him. And Hazel says yes, but it's also not a very enthusiastic yes at the same time, as she doesn't seem very comfortable with saying yes at the same time, as her life is about to change in a very significant way. She just has no idea how significant that change is going to be, as she has just accepted a marriage proposal from Byron Ogle right inside that restaurant, that artificial restaurant actually, inside that cube-like trailer. Hazel then tells Byron that she's got to get time to pack, get some things sorted out. Byron says she can't do that. They gotta leave now to get married. Hazel starts to smile again. They embrace in a kiss, but it's clear that Hazel's really not comfortable with the whole thing. I think she's kind of like caught up in the moment here, but Byron's completely at ease. He knows he's at full control of the situation. He's got what he wanted, but also we're not fully convinced at the same time that this is what Hazel wants at the same time as well, that she really has no idea what's going on right now, even though she's agreeing to this whole marriage proposal from Byron. And then we see the scene ends with the trailer taking off with the trailer in tow, that cube-like trailer, leaving for a new journey in Hazel's life. And that's where the episode ends, with that ending there. So let's see what happens next in the future episodes of Made for Love from HBO Max. But overall, a really good episode. I really liked how they showed more of Hazel's history in terms of who she was before she met Byron, also showing more about her personality, what kind of person she was before, and where she's going in the future, and also showing more about the struggle with Byron as well in terms of what he's doing to get back with Hazel in terms of winning her back, and also showing Hazel's continued resistance towards that as she desires her own independence. And also showing more about the growing relationship between Hazel and her father, and they haven't seen each other for 10 years. So this episode really did a really good job of that, particularly by showing her father's protective nature by Hazel hanging out with Bangles, and also her father resisting to that as he does not want her hanging out with Bangles. So showing more the protective nature of Hazel's father and that side that he has, as even though they're now reunited, but also still having that tension with one another, but also showing her father does indeed care for Hazel as he's trying to protect her, but also trying show her to be more responsible for herself as well. So overall, really good episode. I really liked how this one played out. And we'll just have to see where things go next week when we recap episode 5 of Made for Love. Now, as for the beer pairing for this week's episode, I am pairing this week's episode with a beer from Great Notion. I've had Great Notion here and before in the podcast and past episodes. And the beer from Great Notion pairing with this episode is called the Ripe IPA. This IPA has a really good art on it. It has like a pirate on it, like a skeleton pirate. And it's a New England style IPA with a very fruity flavor to it. Also a hazy look to it, just like with other past hazy IPAs here on the Brew Distilled podcast, which have shown to be a very good match for Made for Love, given the show's hazy nature. This IPA is brewed exclusively with Citra hops and also includes the tropical flavors of mango and papaya. Very excellent combination, adding to the very good flavor of this beer that most definitely will become a mainstay in terms of hazy IPAs, a New England style hazy IPA. I definitely love this beer. It really pairs well with the show for Made for Love from HBO Max. And this beer is also brewed all year round, so it's available all year round. A definitely excellent New England style hazy IPA. And that's from Great Notion Brewing at Portland, Oregon. And that's going to do it for me this week. I'm your host, DG Monty Ale. You're just listening to Brew Distilled. Please subscribe to this podcast and check out this podcast on Instagram at Brew Distilled Podcast. I'll be back next week with more topics of interest, along with additional recap of Made for Love from HBO Max, along with drink pairings. Until then, be brewed and be distilled, folks. Cheers.